Well, if you will see the pre-war statistics of world industrial capacity, you will find it out that these 11 countries together have had the same industrial capacity, nearly the same, as Soviet Russia herself. So when the Russians have taken over this particular area of Eastern and Central Europe, they have practically redoubled the industrial capacity. Now, as I told you, from strategic points of view, they have located new industrial centers. Again, referring to Hungary's importance, well, naturally, all these Iron Curtain countries have their own particular strategic meaning. Hungary, as a central part of Central Europe, has really a geostrategic location, which is proved again by the history. We used to call that Hungary is a natural garrison for the strategic reserves, which are instructed or ordered to operate in the southeastern area or the central area of Europe. You see, during the war, for instance, or during the previous wars, Hungary was always the collecting point of the strategic reserves, because the central position, the natural ways, the directions of the rivers, the surrounding passages, they have offered a very nice opportunity for quick military moves, for quick military transportation. The Germans, the Nazis, have kept in Hungary far more military forces than in the surrounding countries altogether, only because it was only a question of hours how to transport the reserves from Hungary to Romania, to Yugoslavia, to Czechoslovakia, and so on. So for that reason, you will understand why the Russians placed a heavy industrial center, a typical war industrial center, in this strategic location. Now, as far as the military power is concerned, being short, the first thing you know about the overdimensioned police forces, what all these satellite countries have developed in Eastern Germany or in Hungary. Well, again, to characterize, Hungary, a 10 million country, had 75,000 people as police force. And they were equipped with tanks, flame projectors, and anti-aircraft artillery, so to say, everything which is desperately needed by a peaceful police. Now, when the communists have realized that there is no risk to violate openly the peace treaties, they were going to set up the military power. They quickly introduced the universal military training, and they have set up, as far as Hungary is concerned, 8 divisions. After 3 years of the military training, we estimate the Hungarian trained reservists about 350,000. So you have to know that among the satellites, the Bulgarian armies are the best trained and best equipped, and the Polish armies are the largest. The combined strength of the satellite police and military forces without the reserves, we estimate about 112 divisions. So from that point of view, you will easily understand why this Tito fellow is so worried at the moment, when the Bulgarian, Romanian, and Hungarian military units, according to the last reports, were moving into position along the Yugoslavian borderline. Now, naturally, the people, as I said, is unreliable. So you will put me a question that, well, these people won't fight so well against Tito. Well, the Russians were aware of this fact too. So in the last year, for instance, Romania and Hungary, 39 military airfields were built up for the Russians, the occupation forces. And in the meantime, when the Hungarian units were ordered to move into position along the border, new Russian units were coming behind the Hungarian line to keep the peace, maybe, or better, to control them. So we have the same experiences during the war with the German Nazis. The Hungarian government is a feudal government. Naturally, they were for the Nazi war. But the Hungarian people, the great majority, was just as strongly against the Nazi war as now. So the Hungarian units were so nicely controlled in that time, too, by reliable and trained German agents, Hungarian Nazis, or German units, that it was a very slight possibility how to desert and how to build up on the front line some resistance. Now, if we are touching the resistance as the last point, I hope I succeeded to give you only the outlines that the people behind the Iron Curtain, they are facing now not only a well-developed police state, but they are facing the most powerful military forces, military strength of Europe. So the situation is somehow desperate or helpless or hopeless. Now, in spite of all these facts, I should like to refer again to the communists themselves. In the last few weeks, the Warsaw Radio, Gottwald in Czechoslovakia, Rákosi, the Hungarian communist leader, or the Rabotnicheskoe Delo, the official Bulgarian newspaper, in the very same time, very the same 2 weeks, have complained that the industrial labor is going to slow down the production. Great hunting parties are arranged against the kulaks, against the farmers, because the farmers refused to hand in the productions to the state-owned production centers, or because they are slowing down the process to form the state-owned or state-controlled kolkhozes or sovkhozes. So the broad masses of the people, they are in a resistance, in a certain kind of resistance, but I don't want you to have some sentimental or romantic imagination about that. As I told you, the limits or the possibilities of the recent or the present resistance are much more closer or limited than ever before. May I say so? A resistance is always determined by the characteristics of the regime which it is going to oppose. So if we are going to speak about communist anti-communist resistance, they are determined by the characteristics of communism. Now the first thing, the communists, in particularly in Eastern and Central Europe, they were underground party for 25, 30 years. So they have the best experienced staff, not only how to do it, but how to roll it up, how to detect it. The second one, as I told you, the economic basis are destroyed. The third one, in such a time like this, in a peacetime, so to say, the satellite government have nothing to do else than to watch the people, to control the people. The anti-Nazi resistance ensued or took place in a wartime. And the fourth one, maybe the most theoretic statement I am going to make, that I think, and maybe I am wrong, I think that the time of internal revolutions, the time of the revolts of masses, are already over. The so-called balance of power, which Montesquieu has explained so nicely, is already tilted over in favor of the executive power of all kind of governments, but particularly of those ruthless and totalitarian governments. So you can't resist, you can't overthrow a government which is equipped with tanks and flame projectors and detecting cars and so on. Now I think that this lesson was learned at first by the communists themselves, who have practically given up the so-called Leninist theory of revolutions, and instead of that, they started to introduce the internal plots, the coup d'etat. So if you will going to examine the fate of all these satellite countries, you won't find one of these countries which was taken over by a communist revolt or revolution. No, they were taken over one after the other by plots in the presence of an occupation army or inside the government, having already in advance in the hand all the executive power with which to carry out the plans. On the other hand, if you will go to examine the fate of the Western European communism, you will find the proof, on the other side, that in France or in Italy, where the communists were much more strong than anywhere behind the Iron Curtain, they couldn't carry out the takeover plan by a revolt or by a revolution, only because they were excluded in advance from the coalition government and they had no practical executive power. You see maybe in the newspapers that old Stalin is now started to replace these disadvantages, and in Italy there were great magazines discovered, a great lot of armament. I beg your pardon, I don't find the word. A great lot of weapons were discovered, what the underground communists have collected and stored. So it means that without weapons and without the most modern weapons, after having seen a Korean situation, you can't resist a well-equipped and well-developed totalitarian regime. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to finish, and I hope only that with these short outlines, I succeeded to have your understanding. So in the future, if you will hear something in the newspapers about persecuted workers or executed peasants somewhere behind the Iron Curtain line, you will realize that these people are defending the same ideas, what you are learning now. These people are practically, in a day-by-day fighting, defending the same culture you have had. And they want to be belonging to the same undivisible and democratic world, what you believe. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your patience, and now I should like to have your questions.
Without boasting, to lose without alibying is certainly a characteristic of good citizens. I've talked long enough and maybe too much, but here's the thesis. You see, I've been all this is spinning around, and now let me give you the gist of what I've tried to say.